Amazon 5-star Theater presents Real Customer Reviews, performed by Ed Helms. Tonight's review, Tactical Jacket. I was living a simple life. Didn't get out much. Then, I bought this jacket, and everything changed. Women came flocking to me from lands domestic and foreign. On the 245-day sailboat voyage home, I was attacked by a shark. I knew it was the jacket he was after. Giving up the jacket in exchange for my life. 5 stars. Amazon customer 69. Shop the perfect gift this holiday on Amazon.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The Supreme Court Chief Justice John Roberts, writing for the majority of a case near at hand, the question of the student loans turns on the major questions doctrine. And this was what the Chief Justice has written of the major questions doctrine. A decision of such magnitude and consequence rests with Congress itself or an agency acting pursuant to a clear delegation from that representative body. Or, as Justice Scalia wrote in 2001 very cleverly, Congress doesn't hide elephants in mouse holes. What are they talking about? They're talking about the initiative by President Biden to forgive some of the student loan burden that weighs on America, some people who have borrowed money, some version of those people who have borrowed money, but it adds up to a big number. $400 billion is what the Wall Street Journal says. Richard Epstein of the Hoover Institution joins me to comment on what is the major questions doctrine. It comes from a landmark case previously decided during the Obama administration, and how does it apply to this present oral argument before the court about the president's constitutional duties to advance $400 billion in forgiveness? Richard, a very good evening to you. What is major questions? What is that?
Well, it actually means what it says and says what it means. A major question is thought to be a very big, a very important question, one of long-term structural significance, one of fundamental success or failure for any given program. And we use words like major and minor, or major and minor all the time. There's obviously a line between them that's a little bit fuzzy. But what Justice Roberts was talking about was a case which was clearly on the big deal side of things back in the West Virginia case. What happened is there was a dispute as to whether or not, when you talked about the best systems of emissions reduction, the BSER, as they called it, did you refer to the fact that when you had a piece of equipment that was noisy, you could put a muffler on it? Or did they mean, since the piece of equipment was noisy, what we do is we replace fossil fuels with some combination of wind and solar? And he said, you cannot, out of a provision which starts talking about demonstrable technologies and best system of available technologies and so forth, infer that they want the administrative agencies to switch America away from fossil fuels to some other forms of energy, which are, to put it mildly, untested. So that was a major question. And in this particular case, what happens is we have a statute about student loan called the HEROES Act. And it was a statute which essentially said, if you're going to have people sent to Iraq and so forth, and they're going to be behind on their loans because they're fighting a war or dealing with some other kind of calamity, a natural catastrophe, you could modify the situation or waive some of the conditions. And within the traditional argot, what that meant is that you could tell people, so long as you're overseas, you don't have to make payment. If it turns out you haven't filed the right pieces of paper on time, we could give you an extra 30 days or something of that sort. And this is the way it went. When it got to COVID, it's a kind of a funny thing. Is it or is it not a national emergency? Well, in some sense, it was back in 2020 because everything shut down. And you could suspend the payments during that particular period. But after the emergency is over, and indeed after President Biden recognizes his own, he says, look, I made a campaign promise. I'm going to get rid of all of these student debts to the tune of at least $400 billion. And I'm going to do so on the authority to make adjustments with respect to major emergencies. Well, the first point in this particular case is there is no major emergency that was tied to this. The second point was the whole purpose of the statute was to make sure that people are not going to be made worse off when they have to work in government services in time of emergency. But there was no effort to figure out whether or not the forgiveness in this case was going to go to people who were behind on their debt and in desperate trouble, or whether it's going to go to people who are very flush in terms of the way in which they operated. They didn't care about any of that stuff. And so when it comes to the Supreme Court, it's going to be a paradigmatic 6-3 split. And on the Sixth side, they're all going to sort of deal with Justice Roberts and say, you know, as far as we can see, this is a major question about whether we forgive all student debt. That's something Congress has to decide. It can't be something that the president can decide by executive order, by pretending that a statute, which doesn't seem to authorize this at all, is clear enough to make it good. And so what happened is Ms. Prolegar, who is the Solicitor General, she says, well, this, you know, the legislation is perfectly clear. This is American fantasy land, curious of the Biden administration. And so what happens is I'm pretty confident that the thing will be struck down as being in excess of power. If you read the kind of dissenting voices on this, I thought they were very, very weak. You know, Sonia Sotomayor is right to say there's some people who find it very hard to make their student loans. But that's a permanent condition of life whenever you have millions upon millions of people in there. It doesn't justify jettisoning the entire program. And so the major questions doctrine, I think, will be invoked in this particular case. And why are they doing it? Because without the major question doctrine, there is the so-called Chevron rule, which says that whenever administrators make a decision under ambiguous circumstances, they are entitled to deference by the court. And this is exactly the opposite. So what you have to understand is starting in 1984 with the Chevron doctrine, there was a period of administrative supremacy. The Chief Justice and most of the conservative justices are now well aware of the dangers associated with those kinds of excesses. And so I'm pretty confident in this particular case, the program will be struck down. President Biden will have egg on his face, but exactly what he deserves. He went a bridge too far, and he's going to find out that it will not succeed.
If I understand correctly, the Solicitor General, you've mentioned Elizabeth Prelegar, argued before the court something about standing. The people bringing this Nebraska in this case do not have standing. What does that mean, Richard? And who would have standing? A student loan, a person who didn't want to have the government pay the money?
You are basically hitting on one of the silliest and most sensitive doctrines in American constitutional law. The operative text for the Constitution says the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and equity. A case in law, roughly speaking, is one seeking damages. A case in equity for these purposes is one seeking an injunction of specific performance or foreclosure, some kind of personal remedy. And if you look at the text, the word standing is not there. And so this is a case in which anybody who wants to come forward and to say, look, there's a genuine dispute here. You think you could run this program. We think it's beyond your powers. All you would need to do is to have a citizen or a taxpayer. But starting with a case called Frothingham and Mellon and its twin case called Massachusetts towards Mellon, the Supreme Court added a standing requirement. It's non-textual. It's found nowhere else in the law, which says that when you have a general program which is challengeable, the only people who can challenge it are those who suffer some specific injury from it. And this is absolutely bizarre, because the traditional rule on that is if you have a large number of injuries to a large group of people, if there's a corporation which essentially distributes funds in an illegal fashion, any single shareholder can sue to enjoin the operation. And if successful, get the goods restored to the corporation and then get a fee for services from the corporation for the benefit that it provided. That's the rule with respect to corporations, charitable associations. It's the rule with respect to municipal and state governments. And somehow or other, the genius Supreme Court said it didn't apply here. So given the fact that we have to do this, we're now going to start to figure out who can challenge this statute. And John, just think of it this way. If you don't have one of these artificial contrivances, anytime the government wants to distribute benefits, however illegally, there is no way under constitutional democracy that they can be challenged, which is absurd. And so what they're doing is they're trying to find somebody who, quote unquote, has been hurt. And they find this loan processing agency, and the volume of business that it's going to have is going to be diminished if, in fact, they change the student forgiveness loan. Now, why it is that this is the sort of issue that would trigger a major examination of a major question is absurd. But they're going to do that because the Supreme Court, and what I regard as a kind of a stubborn form of ignorance, has constantly held that you have to have a special, discrete, or unique interest in order to challenge legislation, when the entire body of law says we have two tracks. We have rules to deal with broad scale interests on the one hand, and those are the sort of the representative suits that I just mentioned. And then we have ordinary tort actions when somebody's run over by a truck. And the Supreme Court will not, in effect, bring federal constitutional law in line with the sensible disposition of every other system on the face of the universe. So that's why we are fighting about this standing question. I cannot believe that they won't find standing, because if they said, you know, look, normally when you change a program and somebody else is processing loans under it, you don't have standing to challenge a program if the number of loans are going to be reduced because the government has decided to cut down the appropriation. But in this case, they're going to allow it, because the alternative is to say nobody but nobody can challenge a program, even if it's blatantly illegal. This is the biggest threat to Marbury and Madison in the history of the world. It's always been as crazy as this. It turns out that you have to be able to challenge government situations when they give benefits out of the general treasury, just as you have to be able to challenge government actions when, in fact, what they are doing is imposing particular penalties on given individuals. Those cases are easy for standing. The other class in the welfare state, where benefits become an ever larger fraction of government activity, to say that they're beyond constitutional scrutiny is a level of absurdity. And I would hope that the Supreme Court would address it and start over on the standing doctrine, which is a major intellectual embarrassment with us for the last 100 years.
I'm speaking with Professor Richard Epstein, who teaches law at NYU and the University of Chicago. He's a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution. We're going to turn now to industrial policy and the Biden administration and an unusual interpretation of a congressional initiative. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Nash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Looking for excitement? Chumba Casino is here. Play anytime, play anywhere. Play on the train, play at the store, play at home, play when you're bored. Play today for your chance to win and get daily bonuses when you log in. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay. Chumba Casino is free to play.
Experience social gameplay like never before. Go to Chumba Casino right now to play hundreds of games, including online slots, bingo, Slingo, and more. Live the Chumba life at ChumbaCasino.com.
Truth is, Ohio, when it comes to broccoli salad, you got the secret ingredient unlocked. Miracle Whip. You know it, your neighbors know it, heck, everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows it. That tangy zip of Miracle Whip is the reason why Ohio's broccoli salad runs circles around everybody else's and never gets winded. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip right where it belongs, in all your favorite recipes. Buy Miracle Whip at your local grocery store and get your tang on, Ohio.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.